the Lord, the Satan, and Job. The cost of discipleship. Act 1. Setting the scene.
This drama took place in two distinct places. Strictly speaking, one of those places was not really a place as we think of it.
What do you mean?
Who are you?
I'm an interested party.
Interested in what?
Interested in whether I want to listen to this story or not.
Right. Well, what I mean is that one of these places was the Lord's heavenly court. The Lord doesn't have a body like we do, and he doesn't live in a place like we do. But heaven is real enough, and his court is real enough. So we'll call it a place, for the sake of telling this account of what happened.
Okay, so where was the other place?
I'm coming to that. The other place was in the Middle East. It was the land of Uz.
Oh, it's a story about a wizard. Excellent.
It's not about a wizard. It was the land of Uz, not the land of Oz.
Fair enough.
The point that we need to realise is that although those in the heavenly court knew what was going on in the land of Uz, those in the land of Uz had no idea what was going on in the heavenly court.
That doesn't seem fair.
Fair? It's not about being fair or unfair. It's about a test. Someone is about to be very sorely tested. And that kind of test only works if the person doesn't know that it is a test.
I see.
Do you?
No, not really.
Well, let me get on with it then, and we'll all find out.
Act 2. In the Land of Uz.
This drama, a tragedy, happened in the life of a man called Job. He is the hero, but what happened was also a tragedy for his whole family and his vast estate. He was as righteous as they come. He feared God, and he stayed away from any wicked lifestyle or dishonest business practices. He was married, and the couple had been blessed with 10 grown-up children, 7 sons and 3 daughters. They all had their own homes on Job's estate. His estate was the greatest one in that whole region. He had been blessed with thousands of sheep and camels, and hundreds of oxen and donkeys, and he had a large number of people working for him to help him to manage all of this. His family were well aware of their blessed lives, and whenever they had birthdays, for example, they would throw huge feasts for all their siblings, with lots of eating and drinking and making merry.
Gosh, Job must have been so happy to know that his family knew how blessed they were. They must have feared and loved the Lord as much as he did.
Are you still here?
I'm still interested.
Well, his sons and daughters probably did fear and love the Lord. But Job was so devoted to the Lord that he actually worried a bit about whether they took it as seriously and gratefully as they should, or whether they took it for granted sometimes. Let's listen in.
Where are you going, Job?
Good morning, my dear. I'm just going to prepare burnt offerings for each of our children. They've had another big feast this past few days, and when they drink a bit too much, they seem to lose their inhibitions and forget to stay true to the Lord's expectations of them.
But surely they won't have actually said or done things that would displease the Lord. They're good children. We've brought them up to be upright, God-fearing people.
Yes, I know, my dear. But why take any chances? Besides, it's always a blessing to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, thanking him for his mercy and provision.
And that is a window into the kind of person Job was.
Act 3. in the Lord's Court.
When we first see the Lord in this drama, he is in his heavenly court, holding audience with his angels. They were presenting themselves to him, worshipping him, and reporting on their various responsibilities and experiences on his behalf. Among them was the Satan, who also came to report to the Lord.
Satan was there. The devil just walked into the Lord's court as if he belonged there.
No, not Satan. The Satan.
Yes, I know who he is. He is the one and only Satan, the big D.
No, that's not what I mean. He was not an angel called Satan, like we have angels called Michael or Gabriel. Satan was not a personal name. It was a title. It was his title under the Lord's rule. In these two chapters in the Bible, he is always referred to as the Satan, even though lots of translations just write Satan, giving the impression that it is a name. And yes, it seems that he did belong there in the Lord's court.
A title? Who knew? What did it mean?
Well, it means the adversary, or something like that. Not in a personal sense, more like what we would understand as the prosecuting lawyer in a court case. What it means is that within the Lord's court, the Satan was the one who was watching people to see who needed close watching. He tested people, testing them for the depth of their faith in the Lord, their commitment to the Lord, their devotion to the Lord.
And the Lord allowed this?
Yes. There is no sense in the biblical account that there was any shock that the Satan was there with the angels. The Lord doesn't challenge or rebuke him for being there. In fact, the Lord has two important conversations with him, as we shall see, if you ever let me get on with it. Let's listen in.
Ah, I see that the Satan has come into my presence.
My Lord God.
And where have you come from this time before coming to my court?
I have been wandering all over the earth, my lord, and I have been wandering about lots of different people in all kinds of places.
And did you happen to notice my servant Job?
Yes, my lord, I noticed him.
He truly worships me. There is no one like him in his righteous life, his awe of me, and his resistance to all he thinks wicked. He is devoted to me.
Yes, my lord.
Do you challenge my assessment of Job?
I am cautious about him, my lord. Is it not too easy for him to serve you?
Easy?
What I mean is that he has never really been tested. You have blessed him so much. You have seen to it that he, his family, his entire estate have been protected and provided for. Others have not fared anything like as well as Job. And so at times their trust in your providence has been tested.
What are you implying?
I believe that only if you were to decree that he should lose all that he has, family, livestock, servants, only then would you know for certain that he is as devoted to you as you consider him to be.
You dare to say this to me?
Oh, it is my purpose, my lord. I am not challenging you. I am challenging Job to show that his love and fear for you comes from within himself, from his very being, and not because you have been nothing but generous to him, giving him so much. Would he love and serve you so much if you took from him as well as giving to him?
Very well. I give you permission to test him with respect to all that he has in his life. Family, livestock and servants. I am confident of this man. But remember one thing very carefully indeed.
My lord?
You may not cause him any harm whatsoever. Take heed.
As you will, my lord.
Act 4. The First Testing of Job.
This is going to be bad, isn't it?
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
Maybe this certain character is not the faithful and true servant of the Lord that he is supposed to be.
And you are insightful for someone who's not supposed to be here at all. But let's get on with the story. The Satan pushed his permission to the limit. He could have arranged for any one of the following four catastrophes to happen to Job and his family, stopping there and watching to see Job's reaction. But he carried on and orchestrated all four of these, all of them happening at the same time. Job and his wife had no chance. His family had no chance either, as we shall see. The first blow came on a day that started off full of joy and celebration. Job's eldest son was hosting a feast at his own home.
Master, master.
What is it?
Oh, master, I can hardly say this. We were out in the fields ploughing with the oxen and letting the donkeys graze when we were suddenly attacked by Sabaeans. They killed all your servants and stole all your oxen and donkeys. I managed to escape by the skin of my teeth.
Job and his wife could hardly take it in. And when they were sitting there in shock, the second blow came.
Master, master.
Enough. I'll hear you in a minute. I've just heard some terrible news.
But master, this is terrible news.
What?
We were herding your sheep in the fields when all of a sudden great fireballs rained down on us from the sky. All your sheep were destroyed and your servants killed. I managed to escape by some miracle.
Job was struck dumb. How could this be happening? As he and his wife looked at one another in horror, the third blow fell.
Master, master.
No, no, nothing more, I beg of you. What's happened now?
We were herding your camels in the shadow of the hills when suddenly we were attacked by Chaldeans. Three raiding parties swooped down on us out of the hills and stole your camels. We tried to fight them off, master, but they killed everyone else. I alone managed to escape.
This was overwhelming, all coming at once. Job and his wife were rooted to the spot, unable to move and hardly able to feel or think anything. This was too much to take in. Job's wife was reeling from the news.
This can't be true. Why would God allow this to happen to us? We haven't done anything wrong. No one fears him as you do. You will even be sacrificing burnt offerings tomorrow for our children, just in case they inadvertently offended God in their festivities.
Job was about to reply when he spotted another of his servants running to the entrance to his tent, but then stopping. She looked terrible, and she looked as if the last thing she wanted was to enter. Her head was down, and she was shaking. Job looked closer. His servant was weeping.
I don't think I want to hear any more.
I know.
Come close. You have nothing to fear here. You also have news of my estate and people. What's left?
Master, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to tell you my news. You know that your sons and daughters were feasting at your oldest son's home. I was there, nearby, fetching and carrying. The biggest, fiercest sandstorm I ever saw came out of nowhere, Master.
Tell me.
The sandstorm destroyed your son's home, Master. They were all hindered by tiredness and the amount of drink that they had consumed, and did not realise the danger they were in until it was too late. They didn't get to shelter. They were all engulfed and perished in the sandstorm. None of us outside could do anything, Master.
The whole tent was silent and pregnant with grief and disbelief. Then Job stood up, looking on his face like he was fighting a terrible creature inside himself. He staggered to his private quarters, where he tore his fine robe in his grief, tearing it as he felt torn, having had his family torn from him. He shaved his head, exposing his bare head to the gaze of God. He was naked before his God, and he fell to the ground. He tried to pray, but his voice was shouting and breaking. As his wife collapsed in her quarters under the unbearable grief and bewilderment of what had happened, she heard her husband's cries. She went to him, seeing him lying on the ground weeping. She was bold in saying words that she knew would anger him.
So we see now that we are just like everyone else. We serve a God who can turn on us at any time. Why worship a God who does not protect us from evil and hardship? Is this not what a God does for his people?
No, you are wrong. God is our Lord, and he is with us in all that we do and in all that happens to us. I don't know why all this has happened to us, but I will trust him for an answer. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised.
Job's wife stared at him, and then left quietly, tears streaming quietly down her face onto the ground.
Act 5. Time to reflect.
This is terrible. How could Job have kept his trust in God? No one could pass a test that big.
Job did. He still challenges all of us today with his faith and commitment to the Lord. But the Lord's response would also have been important.
What was it?
I don't know, but I think he smiled. I think it was a gentle, sad smile, but the Lord knew the character of his servant and worshipper, Job. Let's see how things developed.
Act 6. In the Lord's Court.
It was some time later. Job and his wife were trying to go on with their lives, but the strain was strong between them, and between Job's wife and the Lord. The Lord was again in his heavenly court, holding audience with his angels. The Satan was among them again.
He came back after what he had done.
As I said before, it seems that the Satan was one of the Lord's servants. The Lord had given him the right to be there, and we hear them having another important conversation. Let's listen in.
Ah, I see that you have come into my presence once more.
My Lord God.
And where have you come from this time before coming to my court?
As always, my Lord, I have been wandering all over the earth, wondering about the motives of many people.
And do you have news of my servant Job?
I did notice him again, my lord.
Then you have noticed that in spite of your caution, he truly worships me.
It would seem so, my lord.
You asked my permission to test his faith to the limit, and I gave it to you. He has shown and kept the integrity which I knew was his.
Yes, my lord.
Do you still challenge my assessment of Job?
I remain unconvinced, my lord. People will often endure hardships and calamities that befall others as long as they themselves are healthy and strong.
Say what it is you have come to say.
Skin for skin. I believe that only if you were to decree that he should suffer disease in his body, losing his health and strength, would you know for certain that he is as devoted to you as you consider him to be?
Why do you say this?
Oh, it is my purpose, my lord. I am not challenging you. I am challenging Job. He can eat and drink as he pleases, sleep comfortably, rise rested. He can work well enough on his land to keep himself, his wife and their remaining people comfortable in life. His life may be a shadow of what it once was, but he has a life to live.
I suspect that you are coming to enjoy your role too much. You have been appointed to test the hearts of men and women, but to do so knowing my love for them all. My will is to see them all come to love and fear me. But who is testing your heart, my servant? Are you looking to see them slip and fail me? Are you looking to tempt them to slip and fail me?
My lord, testing often involves presenting choices to people, and they can sometimes be tempted to make the wrong choice, but that is their weakness, a flaw in their character, not in mine. If they can resist temptation, then they will pass the tests of faith, hope and love.
See to it that you do not overstep your bounds in presenting temptations to Job.
My lord.
Very well. I give you permission to test him with respect to his own health and strength. I am very confident of this man. But remember one thing very carefully indeed.
My lord?
You may not cause him any harm that would lead to the loss of his life. Take very careful heed.
As you will, my lord.
Act 7. The Second Testing of Job.
Before we hear this, I have a complaint to make.
Why are you still here? And why are you interrupting?
Because I'm more interested than ever.
Okay, what is your complaint?
You talk about the first and second testing of Job.
Yes.
Well, I think it is just as big a testing of Job's wife. She gets short shrift here.
Yes, I know. And it's about to get more difficult for her. Let's see what happened. Job was so grief-stricken and so conscious of the huge hole in his life that he was not taking good care of himself. In part, he thought that it didn't matter anymore. In part, it was a mourning custom not to spend time keeping oneself looking well and presentable. He sat in ashes, symbolising the awful reality of death. But the Satan had much more distress and bodily suffering than that in mind for Job. He afflicted Job with terrible sores, literally all over his body. He sat there trying to scrape out the pus and infection with a broken piece of pottery. When his wife saw what he was doing, she came over to him.
My husband, look at what has happened to you. You can't neglect yourself like this. Let me take care of your sores.
No, my dear. We can't take care of this affliction. This is not from neglect.
Then what is it from? He has brought this on you, and yet you still defend him? Is your integrity so important to you?
And what would you have me do?
Curse God and die.
Stop it, my dearest wife. You must never talk like that. You speak like those who live by selfishness, like those for whom God is just someone to meet their every need. Where is your integrity? God is not a servant who runs to do our bidding. He is our Lord. We are his servants.
Act 8. Time to reflect.
In all this, Job did not give in to selfish desire or to sinful words.
Wait a minute. I'm coming back to my complaint.
About how Job's wife was presented?
Yes.
Yes. The way this account is told, it might seem as if the Lord was not as sure of Job's wife as he was of Job. And come to think of it, the Satan doesn't mention her either. Maybe she was just more like you and me.
What do you mean?
Well, maybe Job really was a true champion of faith, blessed with a depth of trust and devotion that seems to be beyond most of us. So it doesn't mean that his wife had no faith or love, or even a pitiful amount of them. Maybe she was just average, like us.
And maybe, like us, a situation arose that tested her faith and love to the very limit. So we shouldn't judge her?
Exactly. We shouldn't judge Job's wife at all. We would like to think that we would be heroes and champions of the faith, but we're probably much more like Job's wife ourselves. What we should do is thank the Lord for Job's extraordinary faith and devotion. He is a model for us all to follow.
And Job never even knew what had happened in the Lord's court, the challenges from Satan. It's incredible that he had such trust in the Lord.
Yes, and there's something else that's incredible. Job's friends, whom we meet next in Job's story, assumed that the Lord was punishing, or at least severely disciplining, Job. Job was somehow in the wrong, had done something very wrong, or had a wrong attitude to the Lord. But we know, because we get to see the scenes in the Lord's court, that Job was put through what he and his family and household were put through for the opposite reason. God was not angry or disappointed in Job's attitudes or behaviour. He knew that Job was righteous and feared and loved him. God championed Job.
Do you think the Satan knew that too? Do you think he resented God's pleasure in Job and just took pleasure in seeing Job lose everything and suffer the way he did?
I think there's a very good chance that you are right. The full account of Job's relationship with the Lord was still to unfold, and maybe we will turn to that one day. But the full account of the Satan's relationship with the Lord was also still to unfold. He doesn't appear again in the story of Job, but that is also a story for another day.
Act 9. The end of this part of the story.
I hope we do get to those full accounts someday. I'm very interested now. But tell me, did Job's friends really give him a hard time on top of everything?
I'm afraid they did, but not at first. They came to sympathise and comfort him as best they could, and that meant trying to help him to understand why the Lord would have allowed it all to happen.
Finding a reason for something, even a terrible reason, can bring some sense of relief, some way to make sense of it, to face up to it.
Exactly. They must have had ideas about that when they were travelling together to be with him. But that all melted away when they first saw him. They were about to challenge him about his life and why he might have deserved the treatment he had received from the Lord.
So what happened to stop them?
Well, they could hardly recognise him when they saw him. So badly had he been affected by all that had happened. They saw him sitting in the ashes, and they just wept for him and his loss. They tore their own robes in grief and threw ashes over themselves, sharing the despair of their friend. They spent 7 days just sitting with him, grieving with him, before they started their conversations. And even then, they waited for Job to speak first before they responded. Perhaps when we think of Job, before we move too quickly to commend him for his faith and to celebrate his restored relationship with the Lord, which we see at the end of the book, we should also take time just to sit with him for a while, to grieve with him and his wife as they walked the terrible path that the Lord had permitted. Discipleship can have a cost.
The Lord, the Satan, and Job. The Cost of Discipleship. Written and directed by Walter Riggins. Edited and engineered by Neil Chappell. The cast. Scene announcer, Debbie Taylor. Narrator, Walter Riggins. Interested party, Helen Keithley. The Lord, Neil Chappell. The Satan, Alan Marsden. Job, Keith Bradley. Job's wife, Meryl Archer. Messengers 1, 2 and 3, Lee Rayner. Messenger 4, Kathy Shaw. The music was from purpleplanet.com. This is a Castlegate production for the Congregational Federation.